The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we've got an hour to go and plenty of time for you to join us here at 855-242-7285. Quite a show this afternoon, so we'll devote most of the time in the final hour to the calls. Let's check in with Tony up next. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Feinbaum?
Tony, we are doing great. Thank you.
I appreciate you taking my call. I'm down here in Cowpens, Alabama. And I would like to ask you one question. Why have you discarded our main man from Auburn, Charles, on the radio and TV and keep putting I-Man on that? Us Auburn fans, we despise I-Man. Charles from Real Time is the main deal.
Well, I agree with you. I think Charles is great. We had not heard from Charles for a long time. He called about 6 weeks ago for 4 or 5 days and then stopped calling. He knows he's welcome. I don't know what he does in his spare time or in his not spare time, but he just doesn't call as much as he used to. But when he calls, he's great.
Oh, yes, he is. And I enjoy the show. Everybody up here in Cap Ends, we love Charles, but we hate I-Man because all he does, he's really an Alabama fan in Auburn blue and orange. We can't stand him because he does not pick Auburn up. He wants to put Alabama down.
No, you're right. He's very predictable. Hey, thank you for the call. Dave is up next in Houston. Hello, Dave.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
We are great. Thank you.
Hey, I have a question for you. You know, once Texas and Oklahoma move over to the SEC, how long do you actually think in your mind that the SEC will stay intact as it is before the super conferences come into play?
I think for a couple of years. First of all, it is very difficult to absorb two schools. We saw this 25 years ago with Arkansas and South Carolina, and 10 years ago, and it takes a couple of years to make it work. So I don't think the SEC is eager to expand. In fact, I don't think the SEC had any intention of expanding. But so much depends on the rest of college football. The reason when OU and Texas joined the SEC a couple of months ago, a lot of people thought the Big 12 would collapse. The Big 12 went out and got four new teams. I don't know how effective that will be. But ultimately, television dictates everything, and the two conferences that own college sports right now are the Big Ten and the SEC. So you have to wonder what the rest of them do to try to keep up.
Do you think that the NIL will get so white hot that it'll all turn you know, everybody talks about how it's going to fail, and you know the IRS and all these problems. But let's just say, what if it does happen? What if it does work? What if it does get white hot as far as money's going to these players? I mean, it's going to the super conferences.
Yeah, Dave, not only the super conferences, I think within conferences it's going to the super teams. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's the one, you know, we talk about divisional play and all that stuff that will be taken care of. But the real question is, who is going to survive? I mean, I'm not trying to turn this into a survival of the fittest. Well, I am trying to turn this into a survival of the fittest, because if you're not capable, you will not be competitive. And right now, there are the haves and the have-nots, but every once in a while you see someone slip in. But under the the way this is going, the little guy, even in the big conferences, is not going to make it. And now, hold that thought out there, because our next guest we're going to talk to him about. But just think about what happens next. Who survives and who doesn't, even within the SEC? But that's such an important question. Josh Page joining us from 24/7. Appreciate his perspective. First of all, Josh, thanks for making time. We hope you're well. And the topic here has been expansion with OU in Texas. And I know that's always a topic that you have gotten into as well. Good afternoon.
I had listened to that hornet's nest get stirred up a little bit earlier, so I figured this was the road we were going down. So what are we talking about here, Paul? Where are we going?
Well, listen, I think we could go any number of ways. I'm curious though, because you know, somebody who does what you do, and I know it's a very big and vast playing field. But what seems to be on the folks' minds that you interact with, both social media wise and on your podcast?
Well, to me, there have been two different worlds that people are thinking in. One of the worlds, which we all like to hang out in, is the world where what you wish could happen exists. And then there's this other world that we don't like to hang out in nearly as much, but you have to face, which is the world of reality, the world of what actually is instead of what you wish. And sometimes, in fact, more often than not, and you take calls on this every day, so you experience this too, I've gotten a lot of, here's what I wish college football was. And then there's the next step of, and I want people to legislate accordingly. And, you know, I've had my emergency brake on being drugged through this entire process because I don't think what people are wishing in most cases is fathomable. And it's just once you get to that point, you're likely to turn around and see that bridge has been torched behind you and you can't go back. I mean, how many times have I listened to people? This is a rhetorical question, I guess, but how many times have I listened to people over the last 5 years say, you know, if I knew this is what the playoff era was going to be like to begin with, I don't know. I think I may not have complained about the BCS as much. So I just worry about that because, you know, even though I'm a little bit younger, I have such a traditionalist view of the sport, I guess. And I don't always think quick change is the best kind of change.
Josh, what I hear, and I know you hear it as well, is I don't like this. We shouldn't do it. I mean, a lot of the things that people are saying are already done. And you know, somebody called in earlier and said we need to put a cap on NIL. You can't do that. So my question is, who is going to prosper? I think we know we already have a pretty good indication of that. But who is not going to? Because even within the super conferences, including the SEC, I hear from people inside that they are very concerned that the middle and lower end of it cannot compete in this stratosphere.
It so mirrors the political and economic world in terms of the tenor of the conversation, because that's exactly what I feel. That's exactly what I hear. And administratively, when you talk to people behind the scenes, up to and including coaches and the like, they all say the same thing. You can go talk to someone at Alabama or Texas. They're not concerned about themselves, but if they have a holistic view of the sport, you better believe they have concern about what you would call tier two and especially tier three of college athletics right now and moving forward. And I'll tell you what just terrifies me, again, from that traditionalist point of view, is I'm sure you've heard this too. There is a thought out there that there's coming a day where you cannot deny reality any longer in the NIL era, and you have to start really planning for a world where college football is a lot more semi-professional in the way it's presented, in the way it's structured, because you know as well as I do, if you ever actually want to get control of the transfer portal again, if you ever actually want to get control of NIL, it doesn't happen until you have some form of contractual agreement with players, which only exists under an employment model. And once you've gotten there, you have gotten to a point where not all major universities are going to be willing to go. I mean, I don't doubt that some major programs in the conference that you and I grew up in, the SEC, I don't doubt a lot of them would go down that road. I don't know that Stanford or Michigan or Notre Dame, I don't know that they'd go down that road. And so the biggest, I guess, fear to me is this world, maybe not too far down the road, where you've got two different college footballs, in the plural for the first time, really being played, and one of them takes on the more traditional model of student-athlete, and the other is, if we're going to do it, then let's do it. Let's dive in.
Josh, right now, you hear Kiffin, you hear Saban speak in code language, you hear plenty of people saying a lot more privately. But what is really going on? How did Texas A&M figure this thing out before everybody else?
I think to be honest with you, Paul, I think a lot of people were kind of like they were with the early signing day. And this was not that long ago. Remember when we put in the early signing day and there was this kind of, I don't know, there was a little trepidation, if you will, behind the scenes, even at some major programs, of, well, how many kids should we take? Well, there was one school in Athens, GA, where they said, hey, whatever, let's do it. Let's just turn that into the new signing day. And that's when Kirby Smart and Georgia landed the first top overall recruiting class. Well, now everyone treats that early signing day like that. And I kind of think this first full cycle of NIL that we just came through, it was treated the same way. People, I mean, to be honest, there were no clear sets of guidelines. State by state, you had different set of protocols you could go by. But I think early on, Jimbo and Sark, for that matter, they looked around and they said, hold up, you're telling me that there are parameters in place in Alabama that aren't in the way in Texas, but we're playing the same game here? Well, then let's play it. The only thing that I laughed at was I was down in Fort Lauderdale and we were doing our signing day show over on CBS HQ, and they come in my ear and they tell me, hey, we got Jimbo on. So we bring him in, and Paul, I asked what I thought was the biggest softball question in the history of this profession, which is, hey, tell me how NIL affected this. And he said it didn't affect it one bit. Now, that to me stood out a little bit, because I think it would be very short-sighted to say that NIL did not impact A&M recruiting. I think from that point moving forward, you've heard him take a little different tone. I was listening to Jimbo talk a couple of days ago out in College Station after a practice, and he said, you know, along the lines of, well, you better get used to us being the bad guy in recruiting. Look, fact of the matter is, they're doing what is allowed under the current legislative scope of college athletics. Now, if you want to define what that is, that's its own 3 or 4 hour show in and of itself.
On that subject, what do you think it will mean to Jimbo and Texas A&M on the field? Because the pressure is getting ratcheted up. I don't think anybody expects it this year, but they expect it soon, do they not?
They do. And you know what? You started to use the same kind of guarded optimism that I've used with them. But, you know, the more I think about it, this isn't Napier at Florida. This isn't Kelly at LSU. This is not their first year. So it may be time to take the training wheels off those expectations a little bit. I mean, he's got an entire cupboard full of his groceries now. And his thumbprint is fully imprinted on the program. It's his program. That is Jimbo Fisher's Texas A&M. So I don't think it's out of the realm of reasonable expectation to be expecting double-digit wins from them this year. But moving forward now, when they get that new quarterback that he thought was the best in the country, even above and beyond Quinn Ewers, he went on the record and told us that a couple of months ago. When they get that and they get these perimeter skill guys offensively fully immersed in this system, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the privilege that pressure and that kind of recruiting brings, Paul. You get told that you better win 10 or more every year or it's a disappointment. I mean, Kirby's there, Saban's there, Ryan Day is there. Not many hang out there. But the other thing that I've dealt with a lot is I've had a lot of people asking me, well, what happens when some of these kids want to transfer? Well, the answer is they transfer, the same that they do at Alabama. I mean, it's an inevitability. But what you try and do is load your roster up so much that your practices are, you know, more fierce than some of your games. Some of those players over the next 2 years are going to realize it's a relief to get to Saturday. Because what I face Saturday, 9 times out of 10, isn't even as tough as what I'm facing here on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's not a bad thing. That's what you want as a fan base. That's where you want your program.
Josh, what should we expect over these next few weeks or months with the recruitment of Arch Manning?
There are a lot of different camps out there on this, and they form out of the lack of tangible information. Some camps, I guess is the word we use, the social circles, if you will, and support systems around players have a lot of loose lips. And so I've been in this industry a little while now, and you know the ones where you can get the information, and you know the ones that are playing it real close to the vest. And Arch Manning, his camp is in the latter. Well, the problem is there is no shortage of demand for information. So in the absence of real, tangible juice and scoop, people just make stuff up. So you hear a lot of rumors. You hear he wants a more loose social scene, so Texas leads. And then you hear, well, he wants structure, so Alabama leads. And really, I don't think the decision's been made. I believe the smart money is on them getting into the season a little bit and at least seeing a couple of games in year two of the Steve Sarkisian era before they make that final decision. But I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, quite frankly, about this recruitment because they've been so quiet. There are not a lot of informed sources on the Arch Manning recruitment right now.
And perceptually, it's Texas, Alabama, Georgia. Is that, I realize that you just answered part of the question, we don't know, but is that at least the way you would see it today? I mean, could there be a dark horse?
I always think Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin are there. I always think that they exist. To me, when you tie Ole Miss into it, it really comes down to what does legacy mean? This is another one of those things you hear floated out there a lot. You got some folks who believe legacy is ultra important. Go to Ole Miss, do what Archie did not find a way to do there. Well, then you got other folks who say he really couldn't care less about that. And something's true in there. I guess I can confirm that much for you here today. I feel confident saying that. So I think Ole Miss is there. But if I had to bet, yeah, I'd say out of that group, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, maybe LSU works their way in there. But I think probably the smart money is on those three. And to me, Paul, I'd even zoom in on Texas and Alabama right now in no particular order.
And if Sark has a better year, it would be impossible to think he couldn't do better than the first year. Why would that, I'm again, just speculatively, why would that give Texas a little bit of an edge, so to speak, over Alabama?
Well, I think what you have going for you, if you're Alabama, is generational structure. It's there. It's proven every year. Nick Saban has shown that he's got the kryptonite. Doesn't matter how many coordinators come in and leave. Doesn't matter how many first-rounders leave. They're always stable every year. Obviously, Steve Sarkisian hasn't had time to prove that at Texas. And so you'd at least want to see, do they get off on a better footing this year? Because a lot of the other boxes are checked. I mean, Steve Sarkisian needs only to point back to what he did recently at Alabama and says, well, that's what I can do when I have that kind of talent. Talent like you, for example. You come here, and I'm sitting in your living room right now telling you what I've already done. I've got to have players like you. The other interesting part to watch there, though, is unlike Bryce Young, who has presumably one more year left, Quinn Ewers has not even started a game yet. No. At the college level, and figures to be Texas's starting quarterback this year. I'm really interested to see what that does in terms of this entire thing, because you'd have one of the most high-profile quarterback competitions in recent memory if you had Arch Manning and Quinn Ewers on the same roster.
Yeah, I mean, we saw something like that at Alabama a couple years ago, and we thought it was the end-all, be-all, and we didn't realize the guy behind him, Mac Jones, may have been better than all of them. But it is just fascinating to think about. Josh, many, many thanks for coming on. You be well. We'll talk soon.
I appreciate it, Paul.
Josh Page joining us from 24/7 and CBS HQ. We are going to take a break and get back to the calls. I want to go back to the NIL conversation. A lot of misinformation about that, a lot of misperception, but it's worth talking about, though. How is it changing college football? Has it already changed? I'll say right now, there's no way to put it back. You can't change it. The cliche is obvious. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. So you're not putting it back, but what does it do? How do you feel about college football? As somebody who watches the game or has watched it for a long time, does it change your opinion? Do you like it less? And also the expansion conversation we've talked about throughout the last 3 hours. What is the SEC going to look like with OU and Texas? It's happening. Whether it happens in 3 years or 2 years, it is going to happen. And the divisions are gone. I mean, I know I repeat that a lot on our show, but I am told that there are not going to be divisions. It's just not workable with 16 schools. So if you're an Alabama fan, if you're an Auburn fan, if you're a Florida fan, an LSU fan, an Arkansas fan, what's reasonable? If you play three permanent games every year, who should they be? A lot of conversation here. We have lines open right now. You can get in. We have 45 minutes to go. The phone number is 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back. We are continuing here late on a Wednesday. Let's check in with Craig in Oregon. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you for calling.
Oh, wonderful. Well, you know, I was kind of thinking in the whole NIL deal, I kind of think what gets left behind sometimes is that I don't really think these kids are that short-sighted. You know, is a couple thousand today worth, you know, a possible career in the NFL, you know? You got to think in the long term sometimes where some of these guys, you know, they could commit to a school to make, you know, thousands of dollars and be a number two or number three wide receiver, running back. Whereas if they're at a different school and they get, you know, a different coach, different, you know, everything's different. You know, I think they might make their future career a lot more. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I remember we were in Knoxville a couple of months ago, and I think it was John Fulkerson. And you know, he was developing a strategy to for NIL. Another guy, a football player, had already developed one. So I do think you're right there, because let's state the obvious: most are not going to play at the next level. So it may I know at that age I didn't have any earthly idea what I wanted to do, and you know, maybe this is an entree to that.
Sure. I mean, I think if you've got different development, and, you know, some coaches are a lot better at developing kids than others, you know, and you might be willing to give up that, you know, 10,000 NIL deal to, you know, possibly be a player at the next level. I mean, let's face it, that's where the real money is.
No, you're 100% correct. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Charleston. Dan is calling next. Hello, Dan.
Yeah, hey, Paul, do you think the big schools might rethink some of these buyouts they've been doing after, you know, the Gamecocks, the five of the trustees were removed because they, you know, they used $10 million out of the general funds kind of secretly, and their representatives and lawmakers found out about it?
Yeah, the buyouts are just a real issue. You know, buyouts are supposed to be a two-way street, meaning I'm hiring, let's say, Will Muschamp to keep him from going someplace else. But you know, here's the fallacy with that. Nobody else wanted Will Muschamp. And when Ray Tanner made that deal, it was a terrible deal to give him a $17 million. So if we fire you, that's what you get. But a lot of these coaches are not valuable. You know, it's one thing if you're, you know, if you got Kirby Smart, you don't want to lose him. But a lot of these guys are not worth it, and coaches have been burned time and time again. ADs have been burned. Well, they have been burned. It's not their money. The school has been burned.
Right. And Ray Tanner must know some people because, you know, it's kind of a big story around here, and he's kept his name pretty much out of it.
Yeah, I mean, he made a terrible deal with Will Muschamp. But, you know, the worst deal with Will Muschamp wasn't hiring him in the first place. It was giving him an extension.
Right. It was doubling down on your mistake.
Yeah, and what happens is you get this agent, and there's one major agent that represents the majority of college coaches, and they will pressure the AD, say, hey, listen, my guy had a good year. I can't let him go on the recruiting trail without getting him an extension. And you know, ADs want to get along. They don't. Every once in a while, you'll see one who In Frank Martin's case, I mean, it's pretty well known. The president, the former president, I should say, wanted to fire him a year ago.
Right. It's just, you know, one of our local state lawmakers said the USC was a dumpster fire right now, just with their leadership anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, the former president was a disaster. Harris Pasides came in, and he's the former president.
He's trying to clean up.
Yeah, I mean, all he can do, Auburn had the same situation. All he can do is, you know, get the pooper scooper out. But he doesn't want to. I mean, he's got friends there. He's retired. He's about to go back to being retired. He doesn't want to start firing people if he doesn't have to. Hey, thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. We still have 30 minutes to go. We're going to continue with your phone calls. Anything you want to talk about, this is a rare moment where we can just kind of shoot the breeze and have time to do it. 855-242-7285 is the number. Phone lines are open, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we are back, and we have 25 minutes to go and plenty of time to talk about some of these issues. Bert is next. Hey, Bert.
Hey, Bert. Hey, Paul. I'd really like to get your opinion. It seems to me like I haven't heard anything mentioned about the hypocrisy with this. This whole thing started because players were not getting rewarded for all the money they're making, and yet nobody seems to complain when one kid gets $1 million and the rest of them get nothing. And maybe there is something being said about it, but what do you think about that?
Yeah.
Did they not sue for the same purpose?
Yeah, it would be, right now there's no union for players to do anything, so they're stuck. Again, college sports should have figured this out a long time ago, and they failed to, and that's why we have the mess we're in. It's a good question, though. John is up next in Charlotte. Hello, John. John, you there?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
I want to talk about the pod system.
Yes. What do you think?
Well, I think there's three rivals you just can't get rid of. Rivalry game. Alabama-Auburn, Auburn-Georgia, and Georgia-Florida. So I think that's a pod. And I think what you probably would have is Texas A&M, Oklahoma. And I would put LSU in there, and that would leave another pod with the Mississippi schools, Arkansas, and Missouri. And then that leaves the other four, South Carolina, Vandy, Kentucky, and Tennessee. And we'll think we'd have to still have to have an A and a B group. And you split each pod up 2 and 2, so you might want to separate Auburn and Alabama and Georgia and Florida. And you have a list. And for Alabama, and I'm an Alabama fan, so in Alabama's perspective, you'd want to have Tennessee in one group and LSU on the other, and then you just play home and away, but you play each school every other year. And if you go with the team schedule, you play your three, the rivals that you don't want to get rid of, and then the old rivals, at worst case, you see them every 4 years, but you're seeing them every 2 years because it's home and away.
Yeah, it's as good as any other plan I've heard, John. I think what you said is interesting, though. If you're an Alabama fan, what's the game you can't lose? And I think it's Auburn. I knew you had a different opinion there. I don't think it's Tennessee.
No, I think it is Auburn. Tony Barnhart said everybody's going to have to pick what rival they don't want.
Yeah, no, I think you're – yeah, maybe I misunderstood you. I'm sorry. But you're right. Florida, it's going to be Georgia.
That's not what it's doing, Georgia.
Yeah, Tennessee's important, but it's not as – but
You can't do away with biggest outdoor cocktail.
I totally agree. I mean,
you can't do away with the Iron Bowl.
You can't do away with the Egg Bowl. Here's where it gets complex, though. Texas and Oklahoma, Texas has a natural rivalry with A&M.
You know, I have a back I have a bad connection right now.
Okay.
I'll have to call you back another day.
Do that. But so let me pose this question to every fan base. If you're Texas, and this is where this all begins, you can't play Oklahoma, A&M, and Arkansas. But you could argue, if you're an Arkansas fan, who do you want to? What game do you? I mean, right now Arkansas has been in the SEC for what, 20 years? Who is the natural rival for Arkansas? Is it Missouri to the north? Is it Alabama? Is it LSU? There's a with the boot game or whatever they call it. Is it Texas? Is it Texas A&M? So you have to make choices. If you're Tennessee, what do you do? You've been playing Alabama now since 2006 and have lost every single game. It's getting closer, but you've still lost every single game. Tennessee's number one rival, I think, is Florida. I don't think it's Alabama anymore. I think that's 60 and above. That's a game of the past. That game, I say this as somebody that went to the school and lived in Alabama. I don't think that game's as important as it used to be. I don't think it's important at all. If I'm sitting there at Tennessee, I lose Alabama as fast as I can. You want Vanderbilt, but everybody wants Vanderbilt. So how do you do it? To me, it's very complex. And if you're Vanderbilt or if you're Missouri, where do you go? And somebody's going to get Alabama. Someone's going to get Texas A&M. Someone's going to get Texas. I mean, there's a lot on the line here. Your schedule is critically important. You can't get around it. Your conference schedule is going to define what type of season you may be having. If you're Alabama, what's the toughest game on your schedule every 2 years? You know it. It's obvious. It's at Auburn. I don't care what Auburn has, what kind of season they're having. We just got through watching Alabama nearly lose to a mediocre Auburn team. That game went four overtimes. Alabama was beaten, one play away from losing that game. So that is a really big deal. So, I mean, you're putting all these athletic directors in a room. So I ask you, who do you lose? Who can you afford to lose, and who do you have to have? I cannot imagine an SEC schedule in 3 years for the 2005 season without these games. Alabama-Auburn, Georgia-Florida. You're going to lose Florida-LSU. You have to. You just can't have that game. What else are you going to? What else? What other games can this league afford not to lose? Can you let Texas, Oklahoma go by the wayside? That's one of the most important games in the country every year. Can you lose that game? But on the other hand, can you not have Texas and Texas A&M? If you're Ole Miss, you're going to get Mississippi State. What else do you want? If you're Arkansas, who do you want? Pick your poison. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.